Welcome to the Christian Life Coach Collective. I am your host, Laura Malone, and we're here to talk about life coaching, entrepreneurship, leading yourself well, and lots of spirit-led life and business strategies. So thanks for joining me on this journey, and let's jump into today's episode. Well, on this last Thursday of March, I want to honor Women's History Month and talk about becoming a woman with true power. And I'm going to explain what that means. I am not on a mission to be a nice girl who makes everybody happy. And some of you probably already know that, but I am intentionally trying to live and become a good woman. That's not going to mean the same thing to everyone, but I'm also not trying to please everyone because my calling as a change agent in this world is personal. It's about the way I'm supposed to go about it, not the way everybody's supposed to go about it. And I've learned how important it is to take responsibility for my own life so I can really hold the pencil in my hand, not living at effect of the world or by default because I'm just surviving my life or as a victim because of other people, events, or circumstances. And in my business, I'm on a mission to help other women do the same, to know who they are, what they want, how to get it, and to become powerful story makers in their own lives so they can be change agents for their families and the futures of all the people they influence in their world. To be honest, I don't keep track of what each month is, like on the national celebration calendar. I don't know when National Ice Cream or Donut Day is, you know? I didn't even know Easter was coming a week until this morning, so... I'm not leaving other groups of people out by not honoring them on the podcast on purpose, just by talking about women right now. It just happened to appear and I went, oh, I'd love to do an episode about that. I have a jumping brain that doesn't always catch what other people, you know, throw up into the atmosphere, and I'm not watching all the calendars. I'm just looking at mine and trying to manage that. So first of all, like in researching it, Women's Month started because it was a first a women's week in America celebrated by the school district of Sonoma, California back in 1978. I was three. Woo, woo. And then President Jimmy Carter declared the week of March 8th as National Women's History Week in 1980. It had already been International Women's Week, but then I think Congress, they followed up with some resolution to make it a national celebration of the week. And then in 1986, the National Women's History Project went to Congress and petitioned to expand it to the full month of March. And that's where we're at, you know, 40 some years or almost 40 years later. So I think that a lot of people come at the history of women and the plight of women today based on, obviously, history. And because powerful positions have been held by men for so long, it's just a common underlying belief that powerful is manly for a lot of people. And people don't like seeing women as manly, so then it's easy for them to push towards making women less powerful to keep them more feminine. And that's just human nature. It's been seen as unnatural for women to be powerful, and history kind of likes to explain away any authority that we can really be walking in. But here's the key. It's believing that all of us are created equal in worth, but that none are created exactly the same as a soul with capability and growth, strengths and weaknesses and character and nature. It's just not possible. Our creator has way too many ideas for that. But human nature likes to fight for itself and therefore kind of just struggles against others to self-protect and provide. But the balanced truth is in simply recognizing that women are equal to but different than men. They're not lesser, they're not greater. Humans will always struggle to believe that that different does not equal less than. They're going to struggle with that belief. Our nature is to believe that in our way, whatever our personal way is, and what's different than our way is scary to us. And we might need to protect ourselves from it. And so what our brain does to protect ourselves is to deal with it by categorizing things that are different as either better or worse, good or bad. And that leads to comparison. at least the competition, all kinds of things, but it's how our brains operate. And it's not always a character flaw or spiritual stronghold in our lives, though it can become that. It's actually how we as humans, post-garden humans, that's how we operate, male and female. We all do it. So breaking man down, the male species, or anybody for that matter, to build ourselves up is never going to work in the long run. It's where we need to understand the power, what it really is, so we can learn how to redefine it and reform our belief systems so that the legacy we create with that benefits our children, both our daughters and our sons. Like, I don't want my son to live his life being oppressed simply because men can oppress women. That doesn't make sense to me. Being powerful is difficult for everyone, not just women, but men as well. They have a hard time with power just like everybody, but they handle it in their own individual ways. And over millennia, they've become expected to handle power and the difficulty of having power because they're expected to. But power is just something that humans struggle with. It's not a gender issue. It's a human soul issue. It's the human element is in it. Power is just simply difficult to wield. So the way both men and women have handled it in the past can be janky, can be painful, can be abusive. It can be stupid. But it's not just because of men. It's because false power will move the soul of anyone who desires it, who holds it, who uses it without the strength and nobility of character to wield that power. That's why we have to yearn for the true power instead of false power, which I'm going to get into shortly. But I want to talk about the pendulum of overcorrection. Everything that needs correction will first overcorrect. So a pendulum will swing far, far away from where it was because it has to, because momentum that moves it in the first place can't simply stop at the bottom. It has to keep going to the other side. Then it's going to swing way back the other way somehow, and then way back the other way again. And it's going to occur over and over again, swinging back and forth until eventually the pendulum plumb lines. The pendulum is searching for the center, and so is human nature. And over the past millennia, that's all been happening. But we've come so far regarding how women have been treated, what we're allowed to do and invited to do, accepted in doing. But the biggest shifts have only recently occurred in the past 100 years, and even more so in the past 50, and more so in the 20. It wasn't even until 1974, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act allowed a woman to apply for a bank account and get a credit card in her own name without a man having to be her co-signer, because there was no precedent that she would have a financial ability to make payments. I understand on the business side, if most women don't work, why would a bank want them to have a credit card? They're not going to be able to pay it back. But that is a root system from other things. You know, it's like good business is don't give somebody with no ability to pay off a credit card a credit card. But the reason that they don't have the ability to pay off a credit card is because they're not allowed to work. It's like all of the things stem from other roots, and you have to keep digging, digging, digging. It's like very dandelion root-ish. So there wasn't a precedent that a woman would have financial ability to make payments. But think about it. This act, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, it's only been around for 50 years as of this year. And so in our human minds, 50 is a long time, especially if you're like a 25-year-old listening to this. You're like, oh my God, 50 is so old. And I'm like, that's only a minute away. But in 2024, we've only had that ability for 50 years. So we've come a very long way in a short time if you consider the hundreds and thousands of years where we could not do that. 50 is very tiny. 50 is long in the span of our lifetime, but 50 is very tiny in the span of the world. So swinging to the far side and becoming women who want to dominate men on the far side of pendulum, or women who feel the need to break down half of society because of the hurt and the abuse and neglect, that's guaranteed to happen when you see how human behavior swings like the pendulum. Then somebody rises up on the other side to get the pendulum to swing back towards them, and then it swings back again. And eventually we work our way towards center, but it takes a very long time when human nature is involved. And we have a fight in us to rise up for justice, to speak up for the oppressed, ourselves included. But most of us have never been taught to fight without destroying. If we win all the rights as women only to smash all the men around us, we do exactly what we're taught and we're not winning. We're dominating and controlling. But why become what we judge and why hurt those who hurt us? Because that's not beneficial. Vengeance only feels good for a moment, not forever. And it also takes a toll on you, on your soul and your body, the longer you hold a need for it. But men have a solid purpose here on earth, as do women. But we have to awake and become aware and arise. We don't have to be fighting dirty to do it. In fact, I believe it causes our voices to not be heard because people can't hear what you're trying to say when you're screaming at them. Even if you're not yelling with your mouth, you could be yelling with your soul, like the anger of your soul. And every word from your heart is like in all caps. And then it lands on other people who hear it in ways that make them believe you're there to crush them. So then they have to defend themselves. And it just creates this cycle. It's something that we have to learn. And like, we have to get a better answer to it. I believe that answer is kingdom minded. And I also believe a lot of people want power because they associate it with being respected. Having respect because you're respected because you're powerful doesn't mean you are liked. Both women and men can struggle with not being liked, though it's more stereotypically put onto women. But I've worked with too many people. I've done too much research to believe that all of the stereotypes about men and women are true. I know too many men who are loving and kind and gentle and sweet and great listeners and compassionate and great dads. Too many women who are forward, blunt, honest, a rock under pressure, great leaders and executives, to say that one gender is powerful and one is not. One is strong and one is weak. I haven't seen that to be true. It's just our belief systems have cycled over millennia, the idea that women are weaker, men are stronger, all women are the same, all men are the same. I think that people are the same in that we all have strengths and weaknesses and we're different. Exactly the same, but different. So let's talk about learning how to step into and operate with true power. Because the problem in our paradigm about power, we need new beliefs about power. So that means we need new thoughts. Do you know that Jesus never took authority over anything? Have you ever heard anybody say, I take authority over that? He never did. He was given authority. He had it because it was given to him. His father gave him authority. It was part of his identity. So because he never had to go take it, he didn't have to worry about anybody taking it from him. It was never threatened. He did take back the keys from hell, and he commissioned us to walk in the power of the kingdom of heaven. But because he's given us what he has, because we're heirs in the kingdom, we don't have to fight for true power. We just have to be awake and aware that it's been given to us and then arise to use it well. So if somebody wants to fight you for power and authority, they're wanting false power, which is a lie and a limiting belief system that we've just been operating in for decades. It was taught from our childhood homes and our schools to our jobs and churches and neighbors and friends. It's everywhere. If people want that kind of power, it will always cause infighting. But when people want true power and somebody else wants it, they'll give it to them. Because I believe that when you have true power and you give it away by example and empowering others, you actually multiply it for yourself. It's like love or hope. You don't lose it by giving it away. You get more and you attract more people to you and have more favor because you show you can be trusted. You're not abusing the power you have. And you earn the right to speak into other people's lives, and that just cycles true power. Jesus had authority because it was given to him, and he was able to treat women with the utmost respect because he was never threatened or offended by a strong woman or a strong man because his identity was rooted It really comes back to identity, what you believe and how you operate. It's not just men who are threatened by a woman's power, obviously, and her authority. Women are threatened as well because it's human nature. All of us are threatened when we're not confident in our own power and we're not confident in our power, authority, or our identity. Or if we feel like we don't even have any, or we believe from experience, people with power are unjust rulers and they rule over us. So then we can project all of our beliefs about leadership and power onto every leader, every boss, every pastor, every teacher, every person with leadership, power, authority, position, etc. But Jesus wouldn't like that. True power is not like that. God the Father is not like this. And the issue is that the lack of belief in true power has infiltrated and dirtied our filter to make us believe we don't have permission to have internal power, regardless of our external power and position. So we've learned that people with power will use it over us. We believe we have to protect ourselves, defend ourselves, rise up against them in order to maintain our internal sense of justice and safety. But true power is not from position. It's not from the role that you're in. It's not from the floor that you work on. True power is from within, and it's a personal authority. It's inner strength, and it's a respect for yourself and for others. It's integrity. So what if you thought about power like a verb, a doing word, and an adjective, a descriptive word, rather than a noun, something that is done and describes versus something someone can own? What if we were going to be a society that created and collaborated so that it's not just the pilot of the plane whose voice matters, but the engineers and mechanics and attendants and passengers are all empowered as well to be a part of the journey in which the power is the verb that flies the plane? What if power was spread horizontally and cultivated in root systems in a power-to approach instead of the top-down approach of power over? I strongly believe, now listen to me, I strongly believe in leadership and systems of communication, organizational charts, like command, leadership. There has to be somebody whose ultimate decision gives everybody else the direction in which to go. But the best leaders I know who operate with a command structure, with leadership, the ones who have the greatest reach and therefore the greatest true power are the ones who spread it, who give it away and serve from it, and actually do the work of looking into the eyes of the ones they influence instead of looking down their noses. And because of our paradigm of what power is, we can tend to believe God is a punisher in our relationship with him. And I'm not going to get into the theology of the punishment of sin, whatever. I want to say that my family of origin has been, I would say, devastated by the belief that God is a taskmaster, a slaveholder, a controller, that he's unkind and angry and we're not worthy of his care or attention. I wish that my parents had not believed that, because nothing could be farther from the truth. He literally created man and woman, because he wanted people to walk with. But our belief that false power would make us great and give us what we want and fulfill our desires separated us from him. Now, that belief is within us and makes us separate ourselves from God. And when we believe that God is against us and that's the nature of his power, we miss out on all the loving kindness and his desire for our relationship with us. We miss out on the knowledge that he created and chose us, and we are adopted by him. We're not accidents. We're not being punished when bad things happen in the world. There are consequences and results from all actions, and we're going to have suffering, but not because God's throwing fiery hail at our hearts and wishing we would just die already. No, he's waiting patiently for us to turn to him in our pain and find healing and peace. But if we believe he is against us and blame his power for our suffering, because our paradigm is one of false power instead of true power that he operates from, then all we're doing is projecting our own pain-filled belief system onto him, and then we never find the healing and peace, and then we continue to blame him or ignore him, deny him, but ultimately miss out on the fullness of his presence in our lives. So let's talk about a woman who operates in true power. I think that she works towards these things. And first and foremost, she wants to know how to use power to others instead of power over others with good intention and heart purity, right? The difference is the belief that her power can undermine, control, and manipulate others versus true power, which undergirds, frees up, and gives away power to others. People with false power use it over others to benefit themselves in some way, like financially or mentally, physically, spiritually, religiously, emotionally. But people with true power give true power and want it to benefit others. It's not about building their own kingdom and agenda. In fact, if they have an agenda, it's to release more true power into the world so more people are free and more people are truly powerful. A woman with true power connects and collaborates and champions. She is not an island. She knows it. She undergirds, encourages, and inspires. And she knows when to flow with the river, when to get out of the river, and how to be a rock in the river. And that is my metaphor for conflict. Flow with the river when you know that it's just time to go with where the river's going. Get out of the river if you know the river's taking you someplace you don't need to go. You shouldn't be going. And be a rock in the river, which doesn't mean you have to be against the river. It just means that you're not getting out. You're standing your ground. She also sees the needs around her, and she meets them if possible, but accepts the limitations when she can't, because not every need needs to be met by her. She takes responsibility for her own story. So that means that she actually owns what she does, what she chooses to think and believe and imagine and feel and do. And she knows where to draw the line and doesn't try to take responsibility for other people, because she can't. She learns from failure instead of resisting and suppressing failure. So she accepts that it's just the human experience. It's not a worth or identity or capability issue. It's just part of life process. And she knows she needs a village. She knows she needs support and help and people to invest in her, speak into her life, even to correct her. She understands that she has influence. She knows who she influences, and she takes care with how she's influencing them. And she determines where she's at, where she wants to go, and then she maps out a plan to get there. She follows through, even if it's just eventually. Sometimes we don't get to follow through today, but she wants to come back. She wants to finish well. And she grows herself, and she creates, and she innovates. And she's a lifelong learner about something. At the very least, be a lifelong learner about something. Pick it. Doesn't have to be about everything, and you don't have to be academically brilliant. You need to know how to move through life and learn what you need to learn for where you're at in the moment. And she has what I call grit squared. Grace and gratitude, revelation and resilience, imagination and inspiration, trust and tenacity. She has integrity and leads by example, letting her actions line up with her words, and she shows people what is possible. And she takes action and lets that give her clarity. And then she lets that clarity bring her confidence versus accolades and social proof being her version of confidence and certainty. And she doesn't take everything personally or waste time reacting to everybody else and defending herself and self-protecting. And she sets boundaries, and then she holds them steady with kindness. And she communicates to others with firmness, but she's gentle. And she celebrates herself, and she celebrates others. These are the things that I think of when I think of a woman who operates from true power. And I'm pulling that out of the women I know who have true power. These are the things I would say about them. Will I tell you that I know every one of them does every one of these things? I'm not saying this is a formula, but I'm saying these are the things that I see in women who serve the world around them from a place of true power, and therefore they find refuge in the Lord as opposed to needing something from their husbands or their friends or the world or the powers that be or the C-suite or the web, you know, the internet or social media. Like, these are women who have true power. And so it's internal. It's not being moved every time the earth spins all the time. I have a book called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You. And I've read it a couple of times. I've listened to it on audiobook a couple of times. And the author, Lydia Finet or Finet, she was a lead auctioneer for the famous auction house of Christie's. And she talks about her gavel. It's her way of focusing herself and letting the people around her know that she's clear on what she wants, how she's going to get it, and what their part in that is. So when she strikes the gavel at an auction, it commands the room and lets all the guests know, like, it's time to stop talking. It's time to listen to the woman on stage who's going to lead them in the direction they want to go, because after all, they are the ones who paid to be there and they need somebody to direct them, right? So somebody needs to lead them and she's the one to do it. So they can talk and walk and eat and drink all evening until the gavel strikes and now they know it's her time, it's her turn. Well, she suggests getting your own version of a gavel. And I recommend this to be a word or phrase or sentence that you focus on to help you get into the space in your mind that first leads yourself back to center. Like, walk yourself to the podium, and that action, let it give you the clarity you need to build the confidence. And then, like the gavel, it creates a sound that has a ripple effect, but it harms no one. It's just a signal to you and everybody else that it's your turn to speak. You don't go hitting people with your gavel. It's not a weapon. It's not an instrument of control or punishment. It's not a scepter. It cannot be extended magically to do something. It's just the thing you use to get yourself focused on what you want and the moment in front of you so that you can influence the people around you with true power and authority. And it reminds you that you know who you are, that your identity is solid and secure. You're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're in the place you're supposed to be, regardless of what other people are doing who feel powerless, who don't understand true power, who harm you, who abuse their power, who are unkind, who are somewhat just ignorant about power. So what could you use for a gavel? What could you say? Maybe it's just a new thought that includes your identity and the true power that you operate from. So what I don't want you to do with this is to turn this, what I would call an unfinished list of a woman with a true power, into the default belief system about the Proverbs 31 woman. The next episode, I'm actually going to talk about the idealism of this proverb and how it can actually harm your belief in yourself, your belief in who God says you are. And I want you to listen to discover who you are and what Proverbs 31 is really talking about. So if you know anybody who can use a big dose of truth about who she is, how she can walk in true power without the stress and pain of trying to grab for power and control in her world, please share this episode with her, because I want women to find themselves to awaken to their true identity, to become aware of who God made them to be, and to arise in the true power and authority that empowers the people around them, that makes them a story maker, that creates legacies that they intentionally want to leave. Remember, all things are possible, friends, and this life thing is figure outable. Okay. Talk to you in the next episode. Hey friends, don't forget to jump into the Christian Life Coach Collective Facebook group if you haven't already, so you can connect with like-directed people and get free resources and ask for feedback, all the things that are going to help support you on your calling as a coach. I hope to see you in there, and don't forget to subscribe to the show.